It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're like millions of other people throughout history and around the world, then you have probably at least once played some sort of game with your friends, whether it's a game of dice, a game of cards, or, important for our purposes today, a board game. And today's episode is about board games, but not in the way you think. Welcome to Ridiculous History. My name is Ben.
My name is Nolan. I'm a fan of the old five-finger fillet, you know, where you take a blade and pop it real quick between the gaps between your fingers.
Uh-huh. Have you ever done that?
Only in video game form. It's an available game in, I believe, Red Dead Redemption.
Oh, that's cool.
I haven't found it yet in the new one, but hopefully it exists. But yeah, that's a pretty scary game.
I've played that game in real life before, and I never went fast enough to actually cut myself seriously.
Was that back when you spent time in that prison camp? In that POW camp?
Well, they called it church camp, but you know what? I think six on one hand, half a dozen in the other.
Not to derail the topic before we even get there, but I just watched both documentaries about the ill-fated fire festival.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about this, and yeah. That was sort of like being in a POW camp.
F-Y-R-E, the ill-fated festival that was most closely associated with Ja Rule when
That's right.
broke in the news.
Well, and the main guy who was the perpetrator of the whole hoax is a guy named Billy McFarlane, I believe is his mm-hmm. last name. And yeah, he was a real piece of work. But here's one thing they didn't have at Firefest. They had these geodesic dome kind of FEMA tents that were mm-hmm. left over they used that they had advertised as luxury, I believe, villas.
Mm-hmm.
They had some really sad-looking cheese sandwiches. They had a lot of kind of gross porta-potties. What they didn't have was the game of Monopoly.
What they also didn't have was our super producer, Casey Pegram. So there they were without Monopoly and without Casey Pegram, which I think is a grave injustice.
It's possible he could have solved the whole debacle.
Quite possibly. We are, by way of fantastic segues, exploring the world of Monopoly, but again, perhaps not in the way that you have heard it explored before. For just a quick look at the strange history of Monopoly, it was originally invented as something called the Landlord's Game in 1904 by Elizabeth Maggie, and it was a real estate and taxation game that was really meant to inform people about the dangers of unbridled capitalism. And when this game was more or less stolen from her, the gameplay was modified so that it rewarded unbridled capitalism. And nowadays, Monopoly is a love it or hate it game for a lot of people. I've never experienced a huge falling out with friends, loved ones, relatives, and so on playing Monopoly, but that's because I don't play with cheaters, and that seems to be one of the big accusations against winners of Monopoly.
I just think that Monopoly is sort of the board game equivalent of solitary confinement, in that it's really boring.
You find it boring?
And takes a long time to finish.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that being a criticism. It's not for everyone, but it's a tremendously popular game. You know what I mean? Like even people who aren't big fans of it have played it before.
Absolutely. It's very true. Do you think people still play it now? Like
for
fun, really?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And they've made a huge business similar to Trivial Pursuit. They have made a huge business in selling themed Monopoly boards.
That's true, but at least with the Trivial Pursuit branded versions, they're like questions related to that topic. With Monopoly, it's just like a different looking board. And instead of a shoe, you've got like a Stranger Things baseball bat or something.
Yeah, yeah, or a Demogorgon, right? The thing that I always found interesting about Monopoly is that it is a pale shadow of the board game life, which is, I think, much more intriguing. But either way you look at it, Monopoly is here to stay. It's a very popular game. And during World War II, it was widely played. It was just as popular in the United Kingdom as it was in the U.S. In fact, there was a manufacturer of Monopoly in the United Kingdom called Waddington, John Waddington Limited, and they had purchased a license to create this just across the pond, which will be important later. But no, where are we going with this?
Oh, man, we're going so many places. Yeah, it's true. Waddington was the licensee of the product. It's almost like a franchise deal, right, where they were allowed to manufacture and distribute this game in the UK after it had seen a lot of success in the US. But Waddington, this company, was also very well known for their ability to print things on silk. And that doesn't seem like a big deal for our story today, but it turns out it might be the biggest deal. And the thing that gave Uncle Sam and his minions of espionage the idea to pull off this amazing caper, I guess we can say?
I think caper is a great word, or scheme. Caper is a little more fun. Yes, the story really kicks into gear with a guy named Christopher William Clayton Hutton, known as Cluddy to his friends, which I think is just a terrible nickname.
Not great.
Not superior. And so Christopher Clayton Hutton, or Cluddy, is an intelligence officer at MI9, and he got this job through a very strange series of events or an offhand comment when he applied to work as an intelligence officer in 1939 for the UK War Office. He says in a quote later, "My passport to the whole curious business has been a casual reference to my thwarted efforts to get the better of Harry Houdini, the world's greatest escapologist."
That's right. Because his whole deal, and the reason that he was attractive to MI6, was that he was kind of a clever guy who was very fascinated by things like up-close magic and little tricks that might be involved in doing some illusions. And he was able to apply that to those kind of James Bondy type gadgets that we all know and love, like, you know, a pen that's also an explosive device or something like that, right?
A tiny telescope that looks like a cigarette holder, or compasses on the backs of buttons, boots with hollow heels that held knives, maps, compasses, and files. But the thing was, and you're right, Nolan, he was a brilliant, brilliant man, but as ingenious as his inventions were, it seemed that the Germans, as they called them, always eventually figured them out. All of them, that is, except for one. You see, he came to Waddington Limited and said, "Hey, you all manufacture a lot of things.
Check.
I understand that you print on silk.
Double check.
And I am of the understanding that you also print a board game called Monopoly."
Triple check.
He probably pronounced it correctly.
These are some important boxes. And right. to add these three boxes up together, you get a way to execute this plot that was gestating in this guy's mind. Because here's the thing. The reason that it was a big deal to print on silk is because they could be used to have maps printed on them. Maps that wouldn't deteriorate in the rain or get torn to shreds if you stepped on them. Or make a noise when you try to clandestinely unfold them, maybe in a POW camp or surrounded by enemy troops.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You see, this is something that fascinated me when we were studying up for this episode. Silk maps were already around because of those advantages that we just named. Silk maps had already been proven superior to the paper stuff that could disintegrate, tear, make noise, give away your position. And because Waddington's made silk maps and Monopoly, Cluddy knew he was onto something. There was one other important ingredient of wartime reality that solidified his decision. He knew that board games were allowed into POW camps, largely because of the Geneva Conventions and the Red Cross.
And also because Germany, at this point in the war, had such a bad rep for adhering to the Geneva Conventions and the way they treated prisoners of war, that they were willing to allow these humanitarian airdrops into their camps, which included things like snacks and, you know, things to pass the time, I think books. But board games were also okay. And they would also think of it as a win for them because they figured if their prisoners were busy occupying themselves playing an interminable board game that took ages and ages and ages to finish. Clearly, I'm not a fan of the game. Yeah, but it would serve its purpose, right? And they would probably be thrilled to have the opportunity to do something like that to pass the time. But there's the thing. A board game is in a big box with layers, with stacks of stuff in it. This is a pretty amazing opportunity for our Mr. Cluddy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, ready to discover a new educational and interactive podcast for kids? Join Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids, where episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We learned how to recycle at the beach.
That was great fun. Callie, what do you say?
It was. And that time when we did the science experiment and Billy made raisins dance.
That is so cool, Billy.
He did. Not to mention when a certain Elliot took up swimming classes with Lisa.
That was me.
Bet you can't catch me.
I'm going to get you.
All this fun and more in our Stories for Kids. Lingo Kids Stories for Kids is now available on StoryButton, the kid-friendly device for screenless podcast listening. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So what they eventually decided to do, Waddington's, we should note, was initially not 100% on board with this. So Cluddy and the UK government pitched it to them hard, and they said, look, we're going to have this covered stem to stern. We are not just going to smuggle maps in these Monopoly games. We are also going to include real money hidden with the Monopoly money. We're going to include French, Italian, and German notes just under the actual Monopoly cash. What else did they include?
They included hidden in little indentations that were cut in the board itself, because back in those days, the boards were a good bit thicker than they are now. So they were able to pre-label, because, you know, the whole label with all the pieces, Park Place and all that, it's just a big old sticker that goes on a piece of foldable cardboard. They were able to cut these very shallow indentations that could hold things like files or those little compasses you mentioned earlier, the very small ones. So the smaller, the better, because they wouldn't want it to be a red flag to any officers, any German guards handling it, who might think this is way too heavy for a board game, right?
You'll also read other accounts that say playing pieces were actually the escape items, like a compass and a file were disguised as playing pieces.
That's interesting, because when I picture the whole cutting out of the indentations into the board thing, it kind of reminds me of stuff like how you might hide something in prison by cutting the pages out of the middle of a book or a Bible or something like that, and having like a file or a shiv or something hidden inside. And it's interesting, too, because this actually was classified until, I want to say, the 1980s, and the soldiers were instructed to destroy these boards. And the thing is, too, they had to use their own intuition to figure out these things were even in there, which is the thing that blew me away, because apparently there was a little red dot on the board that was sort of a clue, I guess, that this is a special board, but it wouldn't have been seen as anything out of the ordinary, other than like a printing error maybe for the folks that were distributing the boards, aka the German soldiers. But it takes a lot for you to think, oh my gosh, this board game surely hides these secret items.
I don't know, man. You spend a lot of time looking at the same board, so maybe the staff of the POW camp just checks it and they shake it a little bit, but they don't really care because it's a Monopoly game. But then there are a couple points that I want to hit before they get lost. So this board, if you're familiar with Monopoly, does look very similar. Most importantly, though, the map. You may hear different things about the pieces versus things being stuffed in the board, but the map itself was always hidden within the board. And MI9 covered their tracks very well here. They invented fake cover organizations to quote-unquote donate these parcels to the camps. So this removed culpability from the Red Cross, because they can't knowingly distribute escape kits, right? So instead, they're not getting stuff from the UK government. They're getting stuff from organizations with names like the Licensed Victuallers Sports Association, the Ladies Knitting Circle, the Jigsaw Puzzle Club, and the Prisoners Leisure Hour Fund. So as far as the people actually supplying the kits know, these are legit Monopoly boards. As far as the Germans know, these are legitimate Monopoly boards. And they just had to wait. It was a leap of faith to wait for one of those POWs to say, hey, this piece doesn't look quite normal. Let me turn it over. Oh, there's a compass. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. And not to mention like that the stacks of money, I believe, were fake money on top, fake money on bottom, real money in between. So that might have been the first thing that gave it away, right? If they're like, think about it. You're going to play a nice game of Monopoly. You pull out the fake money and you say, what ho, what's this? And then there's, you know, real money. And that maybe would make them investigate further, you think?
Yeah, yeah, I think that's quite likely. And it's strange because at first, you know, your first question is, why is this not a film, right? Because it seems like one heck of a story. But the second question is, how much of this is exaggerated because Monopoly is a cultural icon? The answer is really not much.
No, not much. And just to throw in one last point, Parker Brothers themselves, the creators of the game, didn't know this was going on. This all had to be done very secretly, and it's not like they would like let them know, hey, by the way, is it okay if we use your beloved board game to rescue some of our troops? But it you know, and again, it was not known for decades because it was classified, and we don't have any examples of what these might have looked like because they were all destroyed. Because what if a German guard had discovered one? The whole jig would be up for all of the camps. Here's the thing too, Ben. They knew which camps they were airdropping these on, and they had customized packages for each particular spot, right?
Right. This may have been declassified relatively recently, but it was kind of an open secret way before 2007. You can find a 1985 AP press article about this, but again, we don't know what the kits look like because people could describe them, right? POWs who use these to escape. People can recount their appearance, but as you said, they had to be destroyed. There's a fantastic article on this in The Atlantic, How Monopoly Games Helped Allied POWs Escape During World War II by Megan Garber. And, you know, for someone who is severely anti-monopoly, like it seems, no offense, you might be, Noel, this maybe is redemptive. Does this make you feel a little bit better about the game?
Well, sure. I think the game has its positive qualities, and this certainly is one of them. I just personally don't enjoy playing it. It's one of those games where I like the idea of it more than the actual practice of playing the game. I'm really into a game called Pandemic, which is a game that you play cooperatively with people, and I think that's a lot of fun. Sometimes the adversarial nature of a game isn't for me, you know?
There are also games such as, there's a great H.P. Lovecraft game called something like Call of Cthulhu,
I
can't remember.
Right, yeah.
And you cooperate with other players to prevent the coming of the Eldritch Gods.
Yeah, yeah, and the pandemic is very similar in that you're preventing some sort of global outbreak that could annihilate civilization. So it's all, you know, it's all for a good cause. Also, there's something about Monopoly that kind of rubs me the wrong way because, like you said at the top of the show, it used to be much more about, you know, highlighting the evils and potential negative things that can result from capitalism run amok. And now it's just much more about like, hey, let's run amok with some capitalism.
Now that we live in a world of late stage capitalism.
Yep.
Oh, excuse me, gig economy. Sheesh. Well, we would be remiss if we did not ask super producer Casey Pegram, are you a monopolist, Casey?
I like it because the experience of playing it is terrible. I just kind of feel like it's good propaganda for, you know, a different way of life.
So sort of like in the way you might watch a Mystery Science Theater 3000 movie, you enjoy the awfulness of it just for its own sake?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's true to life, true to life.
It's too terribly true to life. Casey on the case, folks. Yeah, I think that's such a great point. One thing that I was thinking about during the course of research into today's episode was the fact that going to jail in Monopoly is just part of business and does not impede your financial or social success in any shape, fashion, or form. Sort of like how paying multi-million-dollar fines is just the cost of business for a lot of banks. I don't want to get too oriented toward the corporatocracy or politics, but that's just the case. Monopoly predicted it, but they predicted it in a terribly misleading way. So I'm glad it did something good and helped some portion of over 35,000 Allied POWs escape from German prison camps.
Yeah, and they don't have exact numbers of how many people, many POWs escaped using these Monopoly kits, but everyone involved is pretty confident that they were effective on some level. And here's the thing I just found, Ben, too, in this great article from ABC News, where they say that airmen, before being deployed on missions that might have been going out on maneuvers at this stage in the war, were told if they were captured to look for escape kits in Monopoly games.
Oh, cool.
So I was thinking more of the folks that have been there maybe a little longer term, right?
Yeah. Which lets us know that this had been in production for some time. You know what I mean? And it worked. Also quoted in that ABC article is Victor Watson, who was a former chairman of Waddington's until 1993. And in his estimation, again, this might be a bit biased because he did work for the company, he says that Waddington's reckoned around 10,000 POWs successfully used the Monopoly map, which is inspiring, you know. And I love that you raised the point that we're never going to know the actual number of people who were for sure saved or able to escape with this.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials... cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, ready to discover a new educational and interactive podcast for kids? Join Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids, where episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We learned how to recycle at the beach.
That was great fun. Cowie, what do you say?
It was. And that time when we did the science experiment and Billy made raisins dance.
That is so cool, Billy.
He did. Not to mention when a certain Elliot took up swimming classes with Lisa.
That was me.
Bet you can't catch me.
I'm going to get you.
All this fun and more in our Stories for Kids. Lingo Kids Stories for Kids is now available on StoryButton, the kid-friendly device for screenless podcast listening. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We should also mention that This was not the first involvement. Uncle Pennybags, that's the name of that cartoon character, the capitalist.
The guy?
Yeah.
People just call him the Monopoly guy.
Yeah. Well, his real name's Rich Uncle Pennybags.
Rich Uncle Pennybags.
It's back when a penny before inflation carried a lot more weight.
It meant something.
Yeah, back when a penny meant something. After World War II, Monopoly found itself in the middle of another international conflict, this one more ideology related, because you see Cuba, the USSR, and other communist countries outlawed the game because it advocated capitalism. You know what I mean? There's not a communist version of Monopoly yet. Someone check on that. If there is, please let me know whether there's some sort of anti-monopoly or communist monopoly. And Casey, by the way, I see that you just sent us something called Monopoly for Millennials.
Yes.
This is a true thing. I remember hearing about this a while back when it broke fairly recently. It was Monopoly's crass attempt to advertise to the millennial generation, right?
Now, they might have airdropped some of these on Firefest.
There we go. Nice way to call it back. So what is this, Casey?
It is a updated version of Monopoly for millennials. And just looking at the box cover art, I love the slogan, forget real estate, you can't afford it anyway. So that's just that lovely, lovely late capitalist dystopia we've all enjoyed.
Casey on a tragic case there.
But I love it because it's got pictures of like bike lanes and it's like a vegan-only restaurant, green kind of ecological messages. And Mr. Pennybags has kind of like some reflective sunglasses on. Looks like he has an iPod earbud in his ear. So they're really hitting the millennial cliches pretty heavily there.
More of a douchebag than a Pennybag.
Yeah.
Community chess cards say things like, your free web streaming trial expires. Pay the bank $40. Tokens include an emoji and a hashtag.
Oh, this is great.
This is terrible.
Yeah.
It's funny because it seems like they're trolling, but I mean, it is a real thing you can buy in stores, apparently.
What rough board game slouches toward Bethlehem to be born?
Yeah, and especially, again, I'm fresh off watching both of these Firefest documentaries, so I have a pretty bad taste in my mouth and a bit of a self-loathing for millennials. Although I'm technically a Xennial. I think I'm on the cusp. I think both you and I, Casey, are a little bit on the cusp.
Yeah, we're cuspers.
We're cuspers.
It's rated in two different ways. The one way would be to rate it on a generational chronological divide, but another way, and some sociologists have argued this, would be to rate it on a digital divide or access to information. You know, so people who were born before the days of dial-up modem, right, are clearly not millennial. I don't know. I think we're all actually cuspers. What we should be wondering about, if we were Hasbro, is what sort of board game the generation after millennials would like to play. Hint, it's not on a board.
It's true. It's true. You also notice it's funny how there's like app versions of most old board games.
Yeah.
And they're very similar. They're just a little quicker to play. Like you mentioned, the Game of Life at the top of the show, and I used to have an app version of that because the mechanics of the Game of Life are a little cumbersome. And with the app, it kind of does all that for you. So it's the lazy Game of Life.
I don't know. It's weird. I've tried doing, you know, you guys know I'm a huge fan of crosswords, and I've tried doing them online, but there's something about the physical pen and paper.
Yep.
Also, yeah, I do them in pen, but whatever. I chose my battle. We should mention, as we're wrapping up here, that Uncle Sam and the Yanks, that's us, so we can say Yankees, and it not be pejorative, we totally copied this idea a little later. After the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941, Hutton was tasked with training his American, like his the American version of him, a guy named Captain Robley Winfrey, in the art of concealing escape tools in this innocuous-looking stuff. And he came up with ideas that took off, kind of dovetailed on Hutton's, and eventually his part of the intelligence services, military intelligence services, escape and evasion section, or MIS-X, started sending out Monopoly boards that were also loaded with escape tools. The one thing different they did is that Winfrey would send his employees into toy stores and department stores to buy civilian Monopoly games, and then they would take the games back to their secret lair, and that's when they would kit them up. So they didn't have, I guess nobody trusted Parker Brothers at that time. You know what I mean? Because they never asked Parker Brothers to manufacture bespoke or custom ones. They just reverse engineered them.
That's nuts that there would be that much logistical planning that would go into something like that. You talk about the glue, for example.
Oh, lay it on us.
Yeah, they had to reverse engineer the exact glue that Parker Brothers used in order to make the, you know, the decal lay correctly. So there was a whole lot of little things they had to kind of like troubleshoot and figure out how to make so that it wouldn't throw up any red flags.
Wait, well, okay, I've got to catch up because just for a second, when you said the decal lay correctly, I had a brain fart and I thought you said decalé, like it was some sort of very specific Parker Brothers
only. You
gotta
make that decalé correctly.
Adhesive. Yeah, you're right though. And by golly, by gosh, by gum, it worked because when the war ended in September 1945, there was only one escape kit that the German forces had not discovered, and it was Monopoly. As you said, Noel, everything was destroyed. We know this really happened. It was officially revealed in 1985, right? But the American use of the game wasn't revealed until 1990. And according to various sources, at least 740-something airmen escaped with AIDS created by Cluddy and Robley Winfrey. Which, you know, it sounds like a great gig if you can get it. If there's a wartime thing and you get drafted, can you imagine, fellas, if someone said, okay, your job is to make top secret board game escape kits? I would be in. I would be 1,000,000% in.
I would too. And I think it's a real testament to British engineering and ingenuity.
Agreed. And with that ends our tale, but not our show. Tune in for our next episode, which will be a surprising romp through the origin story of one of the world's most famous rhinos.
I'm very much looking forward to that. In the meantime, we'd love to thank our super producer, Casey Pegram, Alex Williams, who composed our theme.
Our research associate, Gabe. Of course, you, fellow Ridiculous Historians, for listening. And Noel, thank you for exploring this story with me.
Ben, thank you for being a friend.
I wish we could. We don't have the rights to play the Golden Girls.
You just have to use your imagination or go watch it on Hulu. It's out right now.
I could play it on ukulele.
Can you really?
Yes.
That's very cool.
Well, I certainly have my priorities in order, right, man?
Well, you got to. And you guys should have your priorities in order to listen to the next episode of Ridiculous History. We'll see you then.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.